I read it from a reputable green team site. This is from theCelticsBlog.com, right, Murray?
Correct.
Okay. Bobby Manning wrote this the other day, and it was just a survey of the players that came out of the third lottery position. Not the third pick, but the teams that started with the third lottery position and what happened. He said,
This is Cousin Anthony. Welcome to the Bobcast.
I'm going to bomb this.
So that's where I got it from, Dave, just by the way.
Well, if I want to go home right now, back to South Campus, which it was the best and worst decision you can make. Living here at Syracuse, you get the best apartment in the world. But if you're on campus, you are not getting home easily. And if you're at home, you aren't getting to campus easily. So that becomes an issue when it's 7 o'clock like it is right now. Lunch is way in the rearview mirror, and I need to eat. I have a couple of choices here. Since I have no meal points, saves that money, I can either try to hustle somebody for a swipe, which I don't want to do. Never want to look like a bum. Sometimes I gotta be a bum, but that is not today. Cheapest option is what I go toward next. So that is a slice of pizza. And I am tough on pizza. Very tough. My rating system is tough in all areas. 1 to 10, it is not easy to get a 10 from me. Especially with pizza. So Varsity, right across the street, shadow of the Newhouse building, where I'm recording right now, they gave me this great sound I'm using. They have pizza. They're built as a pizza place. They hype themselves up as a pizza place. They serve wraps, best wraps. If you want a 10 from me, it might have to be the wraps there. But the pizza, I was thinking like 2, 3 maybe. Did not like their pizza for the longest time. So I was eating over there earlier, getting a slice, half hour ago. And I realized 2 things. 1, I was probably a little too hard on their pizza. The sauce isn't that bad. The crust is awful. The cheese is just kind of middle ground. So we'll average that out at a 5. It's going to sound tough to some people, but like I said, my rating scales are tough. 2nd thing I realized is that I haven't been doing Bobcast, and back in 2016, a lot of you listened to the Bobcast, and some of you enjoyed it, some of you were probably just being nice, but I think we found a nice little concept back when we were doing those, and since I've been writing in different places, I've been doing a different podcast primarily, but I think it'd be good to save some time to do this, clear my mind a little bit. I want to do it every day, but that's probably not a commitment I'd be able to uphold. So how about we compromise for Tuesday to Thursday? That sounds fair. Midweek, grinding, nighttime, 7 o'clock hits, I'm hungry. I can grab a little midday snack, come up here and record. I do have a lot of interviews lined up. Great interviews that I've done in the past. Some of them, like the one I'm putting on here, Sean Keeley, the founder and former owner of Noon's Magician, who now writes other stuff that is not as Syracuse-y. I interviewed him probably back in September, before I wrote for that site. And it was a really good interview. It's not going to make a ton of sense right now because it's out of context with the time I recorded it in and then lost it and never really got it up on the iTunes site. Speaking of that, go subscribe, Bobcast, iTunes. You're probably going to have to type Weekly Tour because there's a lot of other Bobcasts up there. I'm going to air that right now. I'm going to try to cut out some parts that don't make any sense now. And maybe if I leave some of them in, they'll be pretty funny because it's so far out of context now. All I can say is that it was recorded a long time ago, so sorry, Sean, and thank you for being on, and thanks for putting in the good word if you did, because I now write for Nunes Magician, nunesmagician.com. Syracuse just got knocked out of the tournament, so I can finally write about stuff that isn't a 50-50 NCAA tournament game. That's exciting. I would have taken that, though. I would have taken a win against Duke. Anyway, what else is on my mind? We're having a debate about bathrooms here on campus. Just not really a debate. It was a one-sided response by me because it made me think. But my friend was like, they built these gender-neutral bathrooms. And I think anyone else is going to take these no matter what. If you're complaining about these bathrooms, here's what you got to understand. Number one, any chance to go in a public bathroom less is a win for me. Number one, it's just closer to other people in bathroom communities that I want to be in. Number two, it's 10 times out of 10 going to smell. And three, it's just a stressful environment. At least for me. I don't want to be caught up in this environment where it smells, where there's people I don't want to see. I don't want to strike up a conversation in a bathroom. I was in a public bathroom earlier today, and I saw a close friend of mine, Leo, and I knew it was him. Just pretended it wasn't for a few minutes, and then he strikes up a conversation with me. And there's a lot of places where you could strike up a conversation with me, and the bathroom is not the place to do it. So whenever I can, I'm going to try to find one of these bathrooms. And so my friend thought that the school was doing a little shameless PR on the bathroom signs by hyping up this bathroom as a gender-neutral bathroom. And she wondered, would anyone of any gender use this bathroom anyway, even if they didn't do the shameless PR plug that, yes, we have gender-neutral bathrooms here at Syracuse? I'm going to say yes. I will agree with her on this one. Because I myself, in a desperate situation, would probably go into a private bathroom that says woman on it anyway. In a desperate enough situation, now, you don't want to be seen running into a bathroom that says woman. And that is always a possibility if you do run into a private bathroom that says woman. But there's no difference. No difference at all. You're just going to get yourself a standard toilet, a sink, and some privacy, which is all I look for in my bathrooms. No conversation, no noise, preferably no foul odors. The more of those on campus, the better, because anytime you can take advantage of a private bathroom on campus, I'm going to do so. Let's talk Pennsylvania real quick, because me and my buddy AJ drove through Pennsylvania on our way to Washington, D.C. I myself am going to do a shameless plug right now and send you to thenewshouse.com where we all published articles from the March for Our Lives over the weekend. So head over there and read those. But in order for that to happen, we had to drive through Pennsylvania. So me and AJ are rolling through Pennsylvania and we noticed five things. Number one, every few miles or so, there's an inexplicable tire on the road. Whole tires. Sometimes they were scraped into pieces. That is a regular occurring thing in Pennsylvania that doesn't seem to happen in other states. Number two, there's continuous potholes, and we all know about potholes, whether you're from New York or Mass. They're bad, they do nothing good, and they are always present. Those are probably the reason for the tires sitting on the side of the road. If you try to shift lanes with this nonstop pothole that ran for miles and miles and miles, this wasn't just one big pothole that you swerve around and avoid. Those yellow lines in the middle of the road, these were as present as those. So anytime you want to change lanes, you are going to be running over a pothole. And if you wanted to change lanes, all your tires are probably going to pop up or get scraped to shreds. That is the second worst part about driving through Pennsylvania. The third is the smells. There is one stretch for 5 minutes, I'd say, that just completely overtook your body. You smell something bad, like I mentioned earlier, and it sticks with you for a second. It hurts your nose, you get out of there, and you're good to go. The Pennsylvania smells were next level. This is the thing that affects you head to toe. There's no good way of describing it. And there's nothing good about smelling it because you can't escape it. You put up your windows, it's just going to fill your car. You put down your windows and it's going to infiltrate your vehicle even more. And so, on a trip like this, there was no escaping this smell for the 5 minutes it overtook you, and it probably took a year off my life, if I'm going to be completely honest about it. That's a little worse than the shitty town names that you run into going through Pennsylvania. I'll read off a few of them. You have Tower City, Ravine, Higgins, Minersville, and Frackville. And so what order did I choose to name those in? Probably the order in which, if I lived in one of those cities, the lower the number, the higher the corresponding urgency to get up out of there. I can deal with Tower City. If I'm putting Tower City on a postage note or resume or something like that, resume's probably a little more relevant. I wouldn't feel too bad about that. But I go into an interview this summer for an internship from Frackville, Pennsylvania. Yeah, that is not a conversation I want to have. Plus, talk about taking years off your life. A city called Frackville is probably not going to be very pertinent to your health. And who named this city? I think one of the top things you want to do as a city is attract people to live there. And I can't think of a name of a city that would make me try to live as far away from it as possible, other than Frackville. Some people might like fracking. Whether you're for it or against it, you probably don't want to live in the city that's named after it. I think we can all acknowledge that fracking is probably not what you want to be known for as an entire city. And number five, and worst of all, is that Pennsylvania must have reflective roads or something, or just a bad skyline, because for the first time ever, I was probably legitimately blinded by sunlight driving through there as the sun set. There was a stretch of road, along with the smell, along with the potholes, along with the weird names flashing up on those green signs right above you, where the sun just went eye level with you. If you try to look away, it was blasting off the road in your face. And there was no escaping that either. So if you're going to drive through Pennsylvania, just know that there's going to be a lot of things that are going to happen to you that you're not going to be able to avoid. Let's talk to Sean Keeley.
Ready to reveal all his secrets today with us on the program, talking about his journey from aspiration to accomplishment, is the former editor, creator, big boss over at SB Nation's Troy Nunes, is an absolute magician, a Syracuse guy from the heart, and now chilling in Central Time. It's Sean Keeley.
What's up, Bob?
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good. Enjoying things here in Chicago. Looking forward to chatting.
So new location. You've been in Syracuse. You've been in Seattle. You've been in Chicago. What's kind of, you know, I know you're a Syracuse guy from the heart, but how have you liked the other places you've been since?
Yeah, I've been kind of all over. After I graduated from Syracuse, I lived in Hoboken and worked in New York City for a while, for a couple of years. And, you know, it was fun, but it was also kind of that post-college, I was broke and just everything seemed fun because I could barely afford to do anything. And then I moved to L.A. and I lived in L.A. for 8 years, and that's where I started Noon's Magician. And, you know, it was great for a while. I lived like right off the beach, which was really awesome. But after a while, I kind of got priced out of there. And then so my wife and I moved up to Seattle, which was great. I really dug Seattle. It's my kind of city, and I love that area. It's kind of a nice mix of, you know, you get the city, but you also get a lot of nature and a lot of water and mountains and mm-hmm. all that open space and all that stuff. So that was great. And I've always kind of wanted to live in Chicago. So now my wife and I moved here, and it's kind of a best of both worlds thing where it's a great city, but also provides a lot of opportunities and is, you know, it's kind of cool being right on the lake. When you're not supposed to say this, but when you're on the lake, it kind of seems like it's the ocean, but it's definitely the lake. but yeah, having a great time. I think Seattle's probably my favorite place I've ever lived, but Chicago's doing pretty good.
Now, who cares about the accuracy? Say what you want. We're up here in Syracuse. I was kind of kicking things around with my friends yesterday, talking to them about you coming on. And my buddy came up with a really good question to start this off, and I think you'll have an interesting take on this. Why do you care so much about this place, Syracuse?
You know, I mean, I think it kind of just goes back to, I remember when I was looking at where to go to college, and it came down to Maryland, Penn State, and Syracuse. And I went to Maryland, and it's a beautiful place, but I just didn't really feel any connection. And I went to Penn State, and I liked the campus, but I don't know, you know, it was kind of like out in the middle of nowhere. And then I went up to Syracuse, and I don't know, it was just one of those things where, like, as I was taking the tour, I just kind of felt like this is where I want to go. And I think, you know, ultimately it was because it was this great mix of all these things that I liked. You know, obviously it had good sports programs. I was a big lacrosse fan, so it was great to go to a school that had such a great program. But also, you know, it's a well-respected school. It's, while it's in the Northeast, it also gets a really good cross-section of different types of people, mm-hmm. which I don't think I quite realized before I got there how cool I thought that was. You know, my freshman floor, we had people from all over the country and all over the world, actually. We had a couple guys from one guy from India and another guy from Bermuda. And, mm-hmm. and so it was kind of this really cool melting pot that I was a part of. And so I enjoyed that. And, you know, I like how people in Syracuse make the most of the winter and don't really let that stop them from doing things.
Yeah, we know that.
No, I mean, you kind of just learn to roll with it. There's two feet of snow on the ground, but you got a party to get to.
Nothing's going to stop the party. No amount of wind, no about. And the hills, too. That's what gets people, too. The hills here are ridiculous.
Yeah, definitely.
So you came back recently. I forget how long ago that was. How big of a difference did you notice? I'm not sure how many times you've been back since you graduated, but was it that different from when you went here?
It's funny. I always say I've been back a handful of times. It's like every couple of years I come back, and I graduated in 2000. And I would say that every time I come back, there's like one or two new buildings, but otherwise everything is exactly the same.
Yeah.
I would say 90% of the campus looks exactly like it looked when I was there. But there's a couple new buildings. You know, they've done some work on the grounds, but otherwise, it feels like I'm right back there. I walk down certain streets, and I can remember, you know, my walk to a certain class, or I can kind of, you know, reimagine where I was, you know, at certain times when I was there. So it's nice to be able to come back and kind of see it, that it's evolved, but it hasn't changed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I kind of expected that, because some of these buildings you go in and you're like, oh, if someone who went here in 1900 would probably come back and be like, oh, I remember this pretty good.
Yeah, right, exactly. Pretty good pretty much everything around the quad has been there longer than we've been alive.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. So you said coming in you were a big-time lacrosse guy, and in reading Nunes and reading you, it kind of feels like football is your thing. Like that's what really shines through passion-wise in your coverage and the site's coverage as a whole. When did football kind of take over in that aspect?
You know, I was as a little kid, I was a huge college football fan, and I've said this before on the site and in my book, but if people don't know, I was a huge Notre Dame fan growing up. My dad was a big Notre Dame fan, and so that was my team, and I was growing up in the early 90s when they were really good, and so I remember I was just that was like my religion. That's all I cared about, and so that kind of continued. And then when I got to Syracuse, I went to my first game. It was Syracuse versus North Carolina in the Dome, and I was hooked. You know, Syracuse lost, of course. That's how Syracuse fans you get used to it very quick. But I immediately renounced my Notre Dame fandom, and I was a Syracuse fan. And I think, you know, I always felt kind of funny about that with the blog, because I think it was pretty clear that I loved football. I loved talking about football, but Syracuse is such a basketball school.
Yeah,
and I was into it. I love Syracuse basketball, and I love following the program, but it's definitely not a love for me the way that college football always was. And even now, I think it's just like the one sport that if I'm going to watch something, that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, you do get the feeling. And, you know, this year has been really bad so far. Like, it's not quite the same as last year. Last year, there was a lot of hope going into the season. This year, you know, once the Middle Tennessee loss happened, it just kind of flatlined. The attendance hasn't been great this year. But you do kind of feel around the program that sense of, like, you know, we're going to be here if they ever do break through. Like, they had those great years way back when, and now, like, for everyone who's still around it, whether they were around for, like, those great teams way back when or just hopped them on more recently, like you, like me, like, there is kind of that sense of, you know, like, no matter how many years they're bad, we're going to be here when they're finally good.
Yeah, you know, it's really hard, I think, for me to kind of explain this to younger Syracuse fans, but you know, when I was there 96 to 2000, I was there for the Donovan McNabb years. Mm-hmm. We went to bowl games every year. It wasn't even a question of if we were going to go to a bowl game. Of course we were going to go to a bowl game. It was a question of whether or not we were going to win the conference. And that feels like such a foreign concept, I think, to Syracuse fans, because it's been so long where we've either been mediocre or really bad. And it's just kind of like this thing we have to break out of. You know, people wonder about whether or not Syracuse will ever get the attendance. When I was there, the Dome was packed every game.
Yeah.
Maybe not every, you know, when Rutgers came to town, people didn't show up. But, you know, for all the big games, we had, like, Tennessee, Michigan, West Virginia, Virginia Tech. Like, those games were packed, and it was great. And those people haven't gone anywhere. They're still in Syracuse. They're still in Central New York. And so it's just the program's just got to get back there. And, you know, one good season isn't going to do it.
Yeah.
It has to be a momentum thing. And unfortunately, we had that going with Marone, and then he left, and that kind of sputtered everything.
You know, I keep saying it. You know, people really jumped off the ship quick in my class here once it went downhill fast last year. And there kind of was that excitement, like, early in the year. I still kind of feel it when Dino Babers first got started, and then Louisville comes in, and the final score wasn't close, but that kind of was a good game. Like, I'm still going to stand by that a little bit. It was at least exciting to kind of see Lamar Jackson come through, and Syracuse to be on a stage that big. Like, they kind of do get the opportunity sometimes to be up there with some of the best teams just playing in the ACC now. Let's kind of go back to your time at Syracuse. A lot of people come here with their mindset on getting in the media. It doesn't seem like that was so much your thing. I read a couple interviews. It seemed like you came in wanting to be a screenwriter. How did that kind of transition to you starting your own site? And it feels like back then at that time, like, that was kind of like a new novel idea, whereas today, like, everyone's trying to start their own site.
Yeah, and it sounds really silly to sit here now and talk about it as if it was this unique thing, but it really kind of was. You know, this So yeah, I came to Syracuse and my interest had been screenwriting. I ended up as a marketing major. I was in the School of Management, but I never quite lost that that desire to do that. And that's what eventually led to me going to LA, and I was working in the entertainment industry. And this is about 2005, and I was looking for kind of a daily outlet. And Deadspin had really taken off, and Bill Simmons, who, you know, he's still writing for ESPN Page Two at this point. And it's really hard to say that now in 2017 that Deadspin and Bill Simmons are revolutionary.
Yeah.
But they really were at that point. They really were. And so it was just this really cool thing. Like, wait, I can get the sports news of the day in a way that's like fun and engaging. That seems crazy. But you know, that happened, and I was like, all right, well, why don't I just start a blog? And so I started it just, you know, as a college football blog with a focus on Syracuse. And I think after about a week or two, I was like, well, I'm just going to focus on Syracuse because that's what I want to write about. And so it just kind of went from there. And then, you know, I think what really helped the site along was I wasn't just writing, you know, the stats of the day or the game recap. I want to write fun stuff. And so I inserted a lot of my humor and kind of went off on some weird tangents, and that, you know, thankfully people responded to that and started following the site, and then it just kind of took off.
I think it's cool that a lot of these SB Nation sites, and I write over at Celtics Blog, a lot of them did start in kind of that era where online was like kind of like a new budding thing, and then eventually they all formed their own identities as like these new wave sites in their own areas of sports, and then grew into something bigger, and then they all ended up kind of joining together under SB Nation. It's a cool story across the board for a lot of them. At what point did you feel like the site really started to hone in on an identity? Like, people came to this expecting a certain type of thing, and then they got it. Like, I know reading it, like, pessimism's a big thing on there. Like, it kind of shines through in a lot of stuff everybody does on there. Like, at what point, once you started it, do you feel like it kind of got an identity?
Well, I have to give credit where credit is due to Greg Robinson for being for overseeing such a bad football program that he gave me an opportunity to kind of have this place where disgruntled Syracuse fans could go and try to figure out a way to laugh at how bad things were. Because if you weren't a Syracuse fan at that point, I don't know how to describe to you how helpless and bad the program was at that time under him. And so I would do this thing called Gregisms, where he would, every press conference, he would say something that made no sense or was just like a weird thing to say, some weird coach speak, and I would like break it down. And that really, people seemed to respond to that. And then the other thing was, you know, using kind of my screenwriting interest, I started doing something called the Octonian, which was I took the mascots of all the Big East football programs and basically had them have these like get-togethers, and they all had, you know, distinct personalities, and they would kind of interact with each other. And that kind of took the site from being just something that Syracuse fans read to something that like West Virginia fans would read it and Pittsburgh mm-hmm. fans would read it. And you know, it kind of helped establish the site a little bit more. And when I saw that happening, I was like, okay, like we're like, you know, seeing people respond to it and enjoying this. I was like, this weird thing that I'm doing that I don't know if anybody's going to like this, but me, I guess other people like it. So I'll keep doing it.
What's kind of, since it started in 2006, what's really a moment that kind of blew you away in Syracuse, whether it was, you know, some of the controversies they've had, NCAA allegations, the shift from Big East to ACC. I know that's a big deal for a lot of the basketball people. I'm not sure what that was like from, you know, your football perspective, but what's like a big-time Syracuse story that came up the pipe while you've been running the site that kind of blew you away in covering it?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing when the Bernie Fine news broke, and I was about to go into I was teaching a blogging class of all things.
Yeah.
And the news breaks, and I am just like in shock, and so I write this real quick thing, I think, and head into the class, and you know, it's like a 2-hour class, and the whole time I'm just thinking like what's going on, like I should be writing stuff, there's probably like I'm just freaking out. And then I got out of the class and like immediately started writing all this stuff, and so, and that, you know, that I ended up writing about all this, you know, about sexual assault and child abuse and legal issues and like things that I would never even entered my consciousness as far as I will be writing about this as part of a Syracuse blog. That was just crazy. And you know, and a really interesting process too, because I think writing about it helped me understand the difference between, you know, my biases as a Syracuse fan and trying my best to be an objective writer about this really important situation. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, you know, I don't think I always did a great job. I tried to find that line sometimes. And but I thought that, you know, looking back, that was such a crazy scenario and such a weird time to be writing about Syracuse every day. On the more lighthearted side, the 6 overtime game in Madison Square Garden was pretty funny. I was actually watching that game in a bar, and the bar was closing, I think, after the 2nd overtime. And so I had to like get in my car and like zoom home, and I got home in time for like the 4th overtime and then watched the rest of the game there. And wrote about that at like, you know, whenever that, like in my time, I think that was like midnight at that point. And that was just such an insane thing to watch live and just watch that game keep going. That was pretty amazing.
What have you thought of, and there's been a lot of wacky games against UConn over the years. Even last year was kind of crazy down at the Garden. What do you think of the basketball program sort of reaching this point where, you know, not too long ago they were a powerhouse, they were up in the top 10 consistently, and now over the last few years, like, they've kind of transitioned to being this, you know, I don't want to say underdog, but, like, they went to the Final Four a couple of years ago and no one really expected them to be there, and they were kind of that quote-unquote Cinderella team. What's it been like to watch them kind of move into that position where expectations haven't been quite as high lately?
You know, it's funny. If you look at Jim Boeheim's tenure as like a big picture thing, if you take a step back, pretty much ever since the 90s, it's been this whole like up and down thing where he'll have 5 or 6 years when the program is really good. Mm-hmm. And then he'll follow that up with a couple years where the program dips down, and then he'll come back up and then back down. I don't necessarily think it's like, I can't tell you that's normal or a good thing, because I don't know if I necessarily see that with other programs, but it is, it's not wholly unexpected, I guess, because of that, because I think that's just how it's worked with him. You know, recruiting classes have worked out or not worked out in certain ways. And the game has changed, I think, so quickly. And he's the kind of coach who's so set in his ways, and, you know, eventually he catches up, but I think sometimes it takes him a couple years to catch up. And then in that time, there's some struggles with the program. But, you know, every time the program dips down, it always comes back up. And so I think, you know, it's another one of those things where it can be a little frustrating the last couple of years seeing the program down. But at the same time, we went to a Final Four. And, yeah. and that is the point, you know, that is the goal.
I think his greatest strength really over the last couple of years has shown to be in this new era where, you know, we saw Carmelo Anthony move on after 1 year. That's no big surprise. But now you see Tyler Lydon move on a year earlier than you probably expected him to. Malachi Richardson leaves after freshman year. Like, everybody now feels like they're trying to make that push after year one, year two to get out of here. And I think he's adapted relatively well to that, where each year it just feels like there's scraps here, and he makes the best of it, because year to year, the continuity of the team really isn't there like it used to be.
Yeah, exactly. I think there was a bit of a rough patch for him where maybe it was Ennis kind of left, and I don't think he was quite ready for that. Or Michael Carter-Williams, one of those guys. Yeah. But other than that, I think he realized, like, okay, maybe even if I don't like that these guys are leaving early, they're going to leave early. So I need to adjust how we recruit. And now, you know, there's always another point guard waiting in the wings, and he's got, you know, he's figured out how he can tap into the transfer market and do that now.
Yep. So, that worked really well last year.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I think there's Jim Boeheim, the purist, who doesn't necessarily like the way college basketball is going.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also Jim Boeheim, the guy who really, really, really wants to win all the time. And that's the guy who has kind of figured out what to do and the best ways to go about it.
Let's go back to 2003. You know, the blog hadn't started at that point, but what was that year like, just following the team, being a part of every single game? Was every single game an event that year? That was kind of a little bit too early for me to remember, but what was that year as a whole like, and where were you for the final championship game?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like, the regular season, I don't quite – is kind of hazy to me. I remember, obviously, Carmelo was a big deal. I weirdly remember Carmelo, like, I remember thinking, like, this guy's really good, but he's not quite where I thought he was going to be, like, with all the hype and everything.
Luckily, the blog wasn't there for you to write that.
Oh, there would have been some real rough stuff, some pretty bad takes on there. But once the tournament started, you know, it was like, oh, okay, this is who this guy is. Mm-hmm. I get it. And I was in L.A., I would go to this bar, Sharky's, in Manhattan Beach, and at the first game of the NCAA tournament, I ran into this group of Syracuse fans, and there was probably about 7 or 8 of us, and we ended up becoming like best friends for the next 3 weeks, where we met for every game in Sharky's, and we were cheering and going nuts. And then in the national championship game, I don't quite know how this happened, but that we were in there. I think everyone else in the bar was rooting for Kansas. And I don't know how that happened. I don't know if Syracuse was just like, nobody likes Syracuse or what.
That's probably it.
But Syracuse wins. We go nuts. We end up like screaming and running down the street and like waving flags and all this stuff. And it was just so much fun, you know, because it was, you know, going to the Final Four a couple years ago was very unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Syracuse was a 3 seed that year. So it's hard to look back and be like, well, you didn't think you had a chance. But to be honest, I don't think many Syracuse fans thought we were going to go that far. I mean, we knew we were good and we had a chance to make a run, but I don't remember people feeling like, yeah, we've got a national championship running us this year. And so it felt really magical when it was happening. And Carmelo was amazing. It was the birth of the GMAC hype and, you know, and all that. And then watching Warwick's block live was amazing. You know, it was like the thing that you always wish would happen but never happens.
Yeah.
Happened. So yeah, it was great. It was a pretty awesome time.
Yeah, it was a year that really ended up defining the program, and for years to come, like, it's all gone back to that point, and you hope they can have another run like that one time. I've spoken to a lot of people who have written books, and I've heard some interesting stories about what got those people in the book writing. There's just been like a million different ways I feel like the people ended up deciding and executing writing a book. What was your path to that?
You know, for me, I was writing the blog, and the blog was getting really popular, and I had a day job, but I wanted to transition into being a writer full time. And, you know, there's a pretty finite limit on how much you can make off of a blog. You know, especially back then, I was doing it independently, and I just joined SB Nation, and they were giving me kind of a monthly stipend for, you know, for the blog, but it was nothing huge. And so I was like, all right, well, what can I do? And I'm like, I've got this big audience, and I've got I can tap into all these resources. What if I write a book and it's, you know, something that's actually of value and doesn't exist, and, you know, maybe people will be interested in that. And so I decided to write How to Grow an Orange. And it was, you know, everything that I felt like you needed to know to be a Syracuse fan. And just self-published it. And you know, I think it did pretty well for all things considered. It was pretty cool to be able to go to Shine and do a book signing there and, you know, do some stuff on campus. And it's cool that the book still sells. You know, I still sell a bunch of copies every month. So yeah, it was kind of a backdoor thing. Like, even though screenwriting was my passion, I don't think I ever thought I would end up writing a book. So it was kind of cool to be able to do that.
What do you, so this has kind of been an interesting trend lately. The fact that the women's basketball team here is really blown up over the last couple of years in terms of success in the championship game a couple of years ago against UConn, and then just consistent success over the last few years. Really interesting, fun coach, Coach Q, but, you know, no one really cares about that. I don't want to say no one, but like the attendance isn't there. You know, there's not a lot of hype around the team. And that's kind of a trend across women's sports as a whole. But within the context of Syracuse, what do you think about the fact that there is a team here doing so well, but really just can't draw the numbers?
You know, I've always said it's really weird because when you look at the attendance numbers, yes, women's basketball draws much less than men's, but there Syracuse drew significantly less than other women's basketball programs that didn't have the kind of basketball hungry fans that we have. And it just really seemed weird for a long time. And the only thing I can really chalk it up to is that the program was kind of middle of the road for a long time. And I don't think Syracuse did a really good job promoting them or marketing them. And then, but like you said, Coach Q has really done an amazing job turning the program into a national program. Mm-hmm. And it's that thing, like, you know, like I was saying about the football team, you know, sustained periods of winning, like that will bring people in. And, you know, I don't know what the attendance numbers were last year. I think maybe it was like a couple thousand per game, but, yeah. And that doesn't sound like a lot. And, you know, especially not in the dome, but that's way better than it was 2-3 years ago. And so, you know, if they keep that up, you know, that maybe they make another run and, you know, and all that, I don't think you're ever really going to see the Carrier Dome sell out unless they bring in like UConn and they're both really good. But, you know, if they can consistently get, you know, maybe get up to 5,000 a game, I think that's a pretty good place to have the program, especially based on where it was. For some reason, it's just you have to find who are interested in showing up and want to support the team. And I don't think Syracuse always was looking for those people. But now they are, it seems like.
And yeah, I think they did kind of have that moment last year. You speak about the steps they took last year where they I think they had one game where they reached into the city and they gave out a bunch of free tickets in the city of Syracuse for the game. And the dome actually was kind of packed, like relatively packed for that game. Like the whole lower level was filled up. It was an exciting game. I remember, I think it might have been Notre Dame that they played, and they had an exciting win there. And the whole place was packed just with like people from the city. So they have kind of had their moments over the last 2 years on that end, and it would be cool to see them, you know, do better than they are now. That's something I'm going to look for by the time I graduate here, is like, where is that program going to be at that point? It'd be a program I think would be cool to cover as well. Hopefully I'll get that chance. Stepping into the shoes of an editor role, professionally as well, outside of the blog, what has that kind of been like for a guy who, you know, didn't go to school to write? What was like the first time you really found yourself in like a legit editor role?
I mean, pretty much when I decided that the site had kind of gotten to the point where I needed some help, and so I brought on some writers and realized like, oh, I have, you know, I've kind of set a standard for myself for what I think the site looks like. And so we need to make sure that, you know, as much as possible, we're presenting clean copy and, you know, like doing all the right things. And so it was just kind of like this moment where I was like, okay, I need to learn how to be an editor now. And it basically just did, you know, trial and error, work through that. And Beyond Noons, I've become an editor for a bunch of different other sites. And as I've gotten older, just kind of understood more, you know, decided to learn more about, you know, learning the style guides and, you know, what you're supposed to do and what you're not supposed to do. And, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of a learning process, and it's fun. I like helping writers improve, their stuff and get their stuff seen more and grow their own work. So it's kind of a fun thing that I fell into, like so many other things, because of this blog that I didn't quite know I would enjoy doing.
What's your weirdest memory from going, like, what was the weirdest situation you found yourself, you'd say, in when you went here at Syracuse?
Huh. There's one. I don't have any like amazing stories. I feel like there's so many people who have better stories than I do from their time at Syracuse. But there was one time when there was a coffee shop on Marshall Street, and my friend and I stole their sidewalk placard and brought it back to our house. And it was like a Friday night, and we were drinking, and it was the kind of a dumb thing to do, but whatever. And then a couple of days later, I guess word had gotten back to us that they were pissed off and they were looking for it, and someone had tipped them off that the placard was in our house. And we were like, all right, well, you know, they don't know us. I don't know what anybody's saying. And then I think that night there was a knock on the front door, and it was the owner of the coffee shop saying, I heard you have our sign. Can we come in and get it? And we were like, we don't have your sign. What are you talking about? And after kind of like pleading with them for a half hour, they eventually came in and somehow didn't see the sign, even though it was like in the living room and like behind the door or something. And there was kind of, I don't know if there was any talk of like taking legal action or something, but it got a little and I think the next day we called up and we were like, hey, we found your sign. and it was just kind of one of those like no questions asked, like just bring it back. And so we brought the sign back. And then I think like the next weekend we saw it and there was this massive chain around the sign, like tying it in
padlock.
So some idiots like us won't take it.
Oh, yeah. The wildest stuff. All these places around here got to take precautions. They probably never expected they would have had to just because of this place. What's it been like since you left the blog? And I know that's a step you want to take and just kind of have your hands off from the editorial aspect of the site now and have a role where you can just kind of chime in as you wish, and you've left it to John and all of that. What's it been like since you've left the blog?
You know, I'll be honest. I haven't really had like any moments of regret about it. I think if I'm honest with myself, I probably kept on it a year or two more than I should have, just because I kind of feel like I just got to a point where I had a lot of things going on. I was running three different websites at one point, and you know, I think being where I was, like over on the other side of the country, after a while, if you're not like just constantly connected to everything that's going on, it's tough to really keep that momentum and keep that excitement up, and so it just got a little bit harder and harder to do. And then I just would bring on more people, and then by bringing on more people, I kind of felt like I didn't have to do as much, and so. It was like I just got to the point. I think it was like 10 or 11 years of doing it, and I was like, okay, I said everything I wanted to say, and I can always come back to it. And the site's in really good hands. I think John's awesome, and everybody who's writing for the site is really great. And it's kind of fun being a fan reading the site now and being able to chime in, like you said, whenever I want. And yeah, I feel good about it. And you know, I'm still a Syracuse fan. Still watching the team and still rooting for the teams, and you know, still a big part of the community, and just in a different way.
All right, I've said all I need to say as well here. It was fun talking to you today. That's Sean Keeley, Noon's Magician, bunch of other places now, How to Grow an Orange, all that good stuff. You can find him on Twitter at Sean Keeley is me. Thanks so much for being aboard, man. This was a blast.
You got it, anytime.
Before I go, just know that we will have another Bobcast tomorrow with another special guest who I will keep secret to build the anticipation. And I have to let you know that I sincerely apologize for equating Jay Crowder and Gordon Hayward back in the day. My good friend Justin Rowan loves to remind the Twitter line that that happened. And I heard about it quite a bit today. Let me pull up that tweet. I said on April 4th, 2017, that Gordon Hayward, and I know this is controversial, isn't that good. Jay Crowder at his price level makes much more sense. And just know, I wasn't the only one who said that. My good friend Adam Himmelsbach tweeted on June 30th, 2017, just saying, Jay Crowder did have a higher net rating than Hayward and the exact same three-point percentage on higher volume and averaged more rebounds in fewer minutes. I think that was a little tongue-in-cheek, probably a little more tongue-in-cheek than my comment was. But as ridiculous as it sounds now, I did have an argument back then. It fell to pieces and it shattered on my doorstep and it appears in my mentions every other day. And it's probably the biggest reason that people who don't follow me would question my intelligence. But it is what it is, and I apologize. I will say, though, Jay Crowder is looking pretty good for the Jazz out there. Just saying. I think they'll take him. I'm Bobby Manning. This is the Bobcast. And you will hear me again tomorrow at Real Bob Manning. Bobcast Weekly Tour Sports on iTunes is where you download our episodes. And I'm going to do my best to get you Tuesday to Thursday. Bring you right through the middle of your week. Let me know what you think.
So that's where I got it from, Dave.
Bobcast.